Hey, thanks for listening to the Shift Your Spirits podcast. I'm your host, Slade Robertson. For over 10 years, I've been a professional intuitive counselor and the author of the blog Shift Your Spirits, where I try to write about spirituality with fewer hearts and flowers than most New Age blather. I also mentor emerging intuitives, psychics, and healers in a program called Automatic Intuition. One of my intentions for this show is to feature the unique voices of others who write and speak about these subjects. So in this episode, I'm sharing my interview with a soul caller. Author of Sea of Miracles, Amy Oscar is a highly sensitive intuitive healer and spiritual guide who has devoted the past 20 years to helping thousands of people come home to the gifts of self-love and their own true nature. Like a spiritual systems analyst, Amy is able to read the energetic architecture of the heart to detect and help us break through the psycho-spiritual patterns which bind us. She sees us as multidimensional beings on soul-led paths, and she offers tools and training and the mirror of illuminated conversation to help us live heart-centered lives in a time of turbulence.
Ah, thank you. I love hearing your voice read my story like that. I sound so important.
I know, right?
Thank you.
The back of the book.
Exactly. I'm so honored and excited to be here and talk with you. I love hearing your voice. Everything you do, every time I hear it, there's this voice quality, which, you know, as an audience, a clear audience, like, voice is so powerful to me. So I'm just thrilled to be here hearing it with you and with all your listeners as well.
We have definitely have that in common. Obviously, there are a lot of things that we have in common that have kept us bound and connected through the internet for probably like 10 years now, wouldn't you say?
We've
both been doing this, at pretty much at the same time in parallel, and we come together every once in a while and talk, and pretty much every time we talk, other people are listening to us talk, it seems like, which is kind of cool. But just as a way of introducing you to those who don't know you, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
The elevator speech. I would say right now, who I am is I'm evolving through some sort of in-between place in my work. I've been working with the Soul Caller Training, which is a 5-week program that I offer to help people connect with this, what I sense is emerging archetype that we're all being called to open to step into, to stand inside this new pattern of what being human feels like, looks like, is like. So this idea of the soul caller, the one who's connected with their feet on the earth, but their energetic architecture, their entire being also connected to this other reality. And what the training actually does, what all my work is designed to do, and you can hear me sort of stumbling through this middle place, because I used to have a very organized way of talking about this, but for me, it's evolving into this new conversation about what it means to be real in this real fake world that we're sort of sitting in all together, this in-between place that we've sort of been slammed into by what's going on in the collective commons right now, where I would say anyone listening to this, if we place this interview in time, we're here, we're at about, I don't know, what are we, 4 or 5 months after the election of Donald Trump, right? And the conversation in the commons is literally focalizing like a laser down to this one question, as far as I can see, which is, what's real, right? And so when this question, I think, you know, nothing happens in the collective that's not happening in the individual. So as each of us is sort of called to this question, called to this sort of centering, focalizing call, really, inside our own hearts and our own minds by watching this play out on the screen of the world, right? There's this awakening sense, and I think especially in those who weren't already working in this intentional way of trying to awaken to what the world is, what the nature of reality is, we're all being called to ask, what am I? What do I believe? What's real? And also this other question, which I'm sort of remembering that you just posted an article, I think, about what's real, you know, and whether we're living in a kind of matrix in the first place. But so all of that kind of big, expansive questioning is what I'm all about right now. And I guess to make it more accessible to someone listening, I've melted down all my work, and I'm sort of focusing in on this one program called One Circle, where I'm inviting people to come into the conversation around how can I be more human, how can I be more real, while I'm also doing this beautiful psycho-spiritual work on myself about how can I be more connected to source, right? Because it's no longer about how can I get power, how can I like add to my sort of spiritual toolkit so I can be more shiny and special, you know? It's more like, how can I be more in touch with my own nature and the nature of things as they really are? How can I encounter that from a place of authenticity, vulnerability? How can I stay open to what is here, even though what's here sometimes looks a little frightening? How can I be strong enough in my own, contain my own sort of my tendency? And when I say I'm talking about the student, the client, and myself all at once, right? But how can I contain what's happening? How can I become wide and deep enough in my own practice and my own groundedness that I can contain a world that looks like this and feels like this without falling apart? Right? So that's the long answer to your simple question.
I love it. I love it. One of my notes was about how I had so many things to ask you about your language. And what I mean by that is there's probably a lot of interviews that I'm going to do with a lot of people where we speak a common language, and those guys out there listening to us right now, they speak our language. You know, we all have this common toolkit. And like you said, we're somewhere in the process of asking those questions. I love the fact that you oriented this in time. We are at the beginning of March 2017, and we are acclimating to what do I say? What do I think? How do I, you know, like, how do I keep, like you said, how do I be wide enough and deep enough to just kind of allow this all to, you know, to play out? And what I wanted to get at with that, we'll come back to that thought, but there's something really unique about the way that you speak. And you're such a poet, and you know, like with a capital P, at your center. If I didn't have that big, beautiful, official, you know, important sounding introduction to read about you, that's what I would have said, you know, that that you're this poet. And when I said that I had questions about your language, there's so many of the things that you talk about that that feel distilled in some way, and also feel like reframed. And there are things about your language and your vocabulary that feel invented Like there are things that you've combined in language and come up with this kind of new terminology for things. And so I always have this sense when I'm reading your stuff, I'm kind of lost in the poetry of it. And then at the same time, I am synthesizing two or three things that I talk about and realizing that you've created like a two-word way of describing that thing. You know what I mean? Like you are a language artist, so to speak. And
Wow.
so it was funny when I was comparing, preparing some things to ask you about. I was looking at your site and I was looking at some of your Facebook posts, which you and I comment on each other enough that I actually see all of your stuff. And I was thinking, I could just go through and ask Amy to define so much of her unique terminology. And we could just have this really cool, dictionary in the back of the Amy book. And that could be the entire conversation, is just kind of working our way through the glossary at the end. And, one of the things that I was really interested in is this concept of the soul caller, which you explained really well. But I'm personally interested in, how did that come to you, that terminology? Like, what was your experience when you started to use that term? Because it feels like something that you either searched for or waited for, or talk to me about that.
That's such a great question. It sort of zeroes in on the thing I do. The first of all, the whole program came to me all at once. I when you talk about distilling and inventing, there's a way that I've come to live in the world, which used to overwhelm and frighten me, but now is essential to who I am, which is I'm listening all the time and I'm watching all the time, because the whole world is talking to me, to us, to everyone all the time. And so, I think I've certainly been told, and I do agree that in another culture, in another time, I probably would have been picked out as a child shaman early on and trained, but I wasn't trained. I was raised by a father with a physical disability. My dad had cerebral palsy, and a mother with a mental illness. My mother was late diagnosed in her 50s with multiple personality disorder. And looking back on all of that, there's all kinds of training in that, in tolerance, in diversity, and seeing the world through the lens of the other, and all of that. Just to start out from the very beginning. But one of the things that I've realized in my mother's mental illness was probably the same gift that I have, but she couldn't hold it. She couldn't build the boundary around herself to feel safe enough to let the world talk to her in the way that was contained by a grounded sense of reality in the self first. So she didn't have that kind of childhood. So, but I did, right? And so for all that their challenges, my parents were determined that they would raise me and my sisters in a loving and carefully held, almost curated. Both of them were therapists and art therapy, social work, healing profession. So they were really skilled in their way at holding us safe from what they had been through. So all of that to say, to me, the world is a call and response universe, meaning if I feel outward into the world with a sadness or a question or a longing, the world will answer me with a response that seems tailor-made, that is an actual response to what I'm asking. And I began to notice that, and I began to test that as a kind of pattern of relational relationship with the world itself. So the very air seems to me to be a substance that listens to me. I don't know if that makes sense. But there's a kind of shimmering listening around us. So how did the name Soul Caller come? I had been working with Doreen Virtue as the editor of her My Guardian Angel column in Woman's World for about 10 years. And I had written a book about my experience, so I had sort of distilled that down for sure. I had been sort of observing my own, I was kind of drafted. My experience was that I was, because I took the column, maybe the column was given to me in this drafting process, but the angels definitely drafted me onto their team. Because I really, though I had lots of encounters that I, looking back, I can see were angelic in nature, I didn't call them that. I was having this conversation with everything. Everything was responsive. Everything was calling. And when I looked in its direction, it had something for me, right? So anyway, I'd been working with Doreen and I had written my book and I was sort of going through some expansion contraction symptoms. I could say looking back where I was having some pretty bad migraines. You know, I was asking for lots of guidance. Because now that was a thing, you know, like, oh, you can ask the angels for stuff I was learning and for relationship and they'll send it. And what I discovered was that when you ask this listening universe, these angels, these nature spirits for more, they send more, and that they don't necessarily understand that we are limited physical beings, some of the limitations of that. I'm sure you've encountered this, Slade, with explaining angels that you have to say, hey, that's too much energy you're sending me. You know, so that sometimes that I'll say, oh, I want everything all at once, and they'll send everything all at once and kind of overwhelm the circuit. So I was having these like energy overwhelm migraines, I think, in hindsight. And so I was having a terrible one and I was on the sofa and it was a 48 hours so far migraine with all the symptoms, awful symptoms that go with that. And I just couldn't move. And I was so debilitated that I just gave up and finally surrendered to the pain. And the pain started to talk to me and it said, you know, this is, come in and have a conversation with this symptom. It wants to teach me something. My body is experiencing pain around something that is trying to get my attention. And so I had this conversation with the pain, and it kind of, the only way I can say this is it taught me how to modulate my own physical energy so that when I ask for energy, I can open more to receive it and contain it more masterfully. And at the end of that experience, I offered this deep prayer of gratitude. And I said, give me something meaningful to do with this knowledge and make it about more than just me, right? I didn't want it to be like a selfish thing, like, you know, I'll open a spa or something. I didn't want to be ego serving. I really wanted to put it to, it was felt so important and big to me and so beautiful. Like I was really wanted to share it. And so I went to sleep. Right after the prayer, the headache started to go. It had served its purpose, its training purpose, I say now. And I went to sleep in bed. And the next morning I woke up and there was a ball of light floating in the room. In the dark of my bedroom, and it was sort of full of patterns. You know, it was obviously clearly an orb. I didn't know what orbs were then. I do now, but it was like a living being almost. And I was like, "Wow, what the heck are you?" And it felt like an invitation. So I thought it would be appropriate to say yes. So I said yes. And like that, just like that, out loud, yes? Am I like, is that what you want? And it came toward me and flowed right into the center of my chest and filled me. And for the next 18 hours, I wrote. Right? It told me, get a pen. We have something to say. And I'm shaking as I remember this. It was really powerful. And it's also because it's happening now in a different way. But, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. But 18 hours later, I had a training program, 5 weeks of just beautifully articulated spiritual teaching, a lot of which I didn't understand at the time, but I just took dictation, basically, or I didn't even. I just, it moved my pen. And at the end, as I was finishing, I was sitting at Panera Bread doing this, the final work on it, and a woman walked by my table dressed from head to toe in white, white tennis shoes, white hair, white clothing, carrying a white tray with white food on it, lobster roll on a white roll, glass of milk. And I had worked with Doreen long enough to know that that was sort of interesting, you know, that the angels often show up with white around them in some way. Surrounded by white light, wearing white clothes, in white cars, right? And yet still I was sort of under the spell or in the dream of the book. So I don't remember thinking, oh, that's an angel at all. I just remember being interested in her. And she walked by my table and said to me, oh, are you a teacher of miracles? And I was like, what? What? Are you talking about? And I realized I had carried the book, A Course in Miracles, in my bag with me that whole time. And I'm using air quotes for some reason. As she asked me that, a white truck went by and started circling the eating area where we were. She was standing, I was sitting, and it was this white truck with the image of a faucet turned on full blast and the word flow right across the side of the truck. And I got that same like filled with light feeling. I was like, okay, I'm in this. I'm being circled by the flow, and this white woman in white is saying, you know, are you a teacher in miracles? And I could feel this spotlight on me, like I'm talking to God. That's how it felt. And I said, well, and this was my actual answer. I know because I wrote it down. Well, kind of, but not really. I mean, what do you mean? Like, I don't understand. What's your question coming from? And like, what? And she said, I mean, are you a teacher of miracles? Just ask me again. And I said, well, I guess so, but I don't really know. I mean, I'm just sort of writing this thing that just coming. I mean, I don't really understand it. And she said, but are you a teacher of miracles? 3 times. And that, you know, we learn always in fairy tales and in mystical experience, question gets asked 3 times so often. And there it was. And I finally just said, yes. And she said, good. And what's the name of the class that you teach? And I realized, I don't know. And I said, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't teach this. This is A Course in Miracles. That was something else. I mean, I'm doing a different thing. And where are you teaching it? Well, I guess I'm teaching it online. And what is its name? She asked me again. I said, I don't know. And she said, well, what is its name? And I said, The Soul Caller Training. And she said, that's a lovely name. That's a good name. And she sat down.
Wow. Wow. That is so cool.
So that's the story.
That's how it came. What? Yeah. Okay. So I'm really glad I asked that question.
Me too.
That is such a great story. I have some personal stories. I call them stranger angels. Those that's my kind of name for those kind of experiences. These people who come in and you have these kind of interactions with them, and yeah, I mean, what else are they? You know,
yeah.
The whole time that I was listening to you, it was such a visual, cinematic experience for me listening to that story. I know everyone is loving listening to just the imagery alone is so good. Like somebody wants to photograph that. You know what I mean? Somebody wants to direct that scene. It's so good. It's so good. So let me ask you this. You have something on your website where you talk about somatic intuition. And I told you I was going to quiz you about your language. And see, all I have to
Do.
do is just ask you about these terms, and there's these wonderful stories behind them. What is somatic intuition?
Well, that's another attempt to explain something that's too big for words, right? Like a soul caller. So, I came up with that when I was building the website, which was, I had a team working with me and they kept asking me, what do you do? And explain it. And how would you say that in a few words? And so we did, in branding talk, right? What's the name of that thing you do? And I couldn't find a name for this. And so I'll just say the experience of somatic intuition is, I'm guessing you'll say, oh, that's what I do. But it's where every part of your body and every field around your physical body is listening. So your body gives you information, and the fields of mind and emotion and sensory awareness give you information, and it all comes through the filter of the body. So I have the experience of being centered in the sort of the hara center of the body, this field of listening that radiates out from me like a sphere and reads into all those layers, reads the body for symptoms, for sensation, reads the field of emotion for patterns, which feel to me like I can often smell the emotions of the client that I'm working with. I'll get a flinty smell if someone's very angry or has been through an experience of being verbally abused. I'll get a kind of scent of roses if certain guides of mine are nearby. So there are a lot of people who come from sort of deep fundamentalist, especially Christian backgrounds, who walk with the smell of roses around them, which I have a sense of Mary's presence, a relationship with Mary. But other essential oils show themselves when I bring through this new book I'm working with, which, unlike the Soul Caller training, which came through as one download, this book is coming through as like a huge download inside of which I'm sitting like a hologram. That's why I say I'm in this in-between place. I'm inside this holographic sphere, I would say, that's teaching me as I walk through my life right now all kinds of things about the book. So I'll get a In the morning, I'll meditate and I'll get a bit of writing, a bit of information, and then I'll go into the world and everything is like that white flow truck and everything is like that woman with the lobster roll sandwich, right? And it's all talking to the lesson. And then I'll come home and sort of put that into the book in my own words. So I'm sort of having this other training experience with them right now. But so what's a somatic intuitive? I would just say someone who feels on all the different levels of their being this sort of sensory listening, which I've been describing throughout the call.
That is actually one of the best explanations of kind of the clairsentience that people talk about. And I know that even in my own conversations with people about that, clairsentience often gets reduced to either empath experiences, you know, absorbing energy from other people, being negatively impacted by environments. I think that's the foundation, you know, that's the thing that we all overlap on, and everybody can kind of identify with that. And then there are these other intuitives that I work with who experience things clairsentiently. And you have to realize a lot of times I'm working with people who are emerging in this, right? So
Yes, me too.
they might even discover, they might come in thinking, oh, I'm clairaudient and, you know, I'm great with automatic writing and, you know, whatever it might be. Or they're a very clairvoyant person. They scan people, you know, they get colors and all kinds of stuff, symbolic stuff that they can communicate about. And then you have this clairsentient experience that sometimes surprises people because they start to experience cues within their own body. It's almost
Yes.
like it's almost like they're like a giant voodoo doll of their client or something in reverse. You know what I mean?
That's
Like
yes.
I always just tell people, listen, you know, if you're plugged in, and you know when you're plugged in, like you know when you're in that sphere and you're, you know, everything is like clicked into that mode, or you're intentionally tuned into someone else, like you've
Yes.
already, you know, sat down and tuned into that person, even if it's to have a conversation like you and I are having, the intention to be tuned into you sets a kind of programming so that anything that happens to me in my body while I'm plugged into you, I have to assume is about you.
Yes. Yeah.
Potentially, right? And so I just always tell people, you know, everyone wants to retreat back into themselves, even when they're making the intention of like, I'm tuning into this person and I'm reading them, but oh wait, there's like a weird feeling in my chest. And you immediately revert to a lot of personal language, you know, my chest, I feel a heaviness. And so sometimes you have to retro engineer that and really consciously stop and remind yourself, okay, wait a minute. What if this thing that I'm experiencing in my body at this moment is actually information? It's just some kind of clue. It's like, you know, it's a graphic that's being lit up, or, you know, it's a somebody's like got an image of the human body and it's a touch screen and they're touching you know, and why are they touching you there? What does that part of the body mean? What does it stand for? And it's interesting actually how many people I talk to experience those things in the same way. Meaning there's very few people that come in with something crazy. If you ask people in your everyday life, how, where does fear manifest in your body? You'll get like literally one of two or three answers. There's
Yes.
neck and shoulder people, there's head people, you know, and then there's the stomach people, right? You know, and it's like and that's just one thing. That's fear, that's distress, that's anxiety. But you know, those things happen in certain parts of the body, sort of in a pattern for so many of us that it's very easy to read that as information. It's a kind of vocabulary. I'm experiencing, you know, headaches. I'm experiencing things in my neck. And you know, it's like, okay, well, what is that about? And here's the thing that I think trips a lot of people up, especially when they're trying to learn to interpret this language, right? It doesn't all have to be intuitive. You know, we have intelligence. You know, we have an intellectual mind as well. And now we have this collective ethereal dimension created by humanity, which is the internet, right? Our telecommunications system to me is like, it's like the first dimension that human beings have actually kind of created. It's not entirely physical. It's not entirely etheric. It's somewhere in between. But how fascinating is that? You know, that we have this abstract dimension that pretty much all of us live in every day. There's some part of our lives that take place there. And it's such a relatively new thing. But getting back to that idea of learning how to interpret this stuff, And this may be completely different than how you do it, and that's cool because we need difference. But I always tell people, you can get the clue. You can get the weird fluttering feeling in the stomach. You can get the strange thing in the throat that feels like your throat is full. You can have those sensations. They're little packets of information, and
Yes.
you can come out with those and then unpack them in this really kind of normal, logical brain kind of way. You can Google, the stomach, the energy centers in the body. What does the throat chakra stand for? And you can research these things in a very non-intuitive way, if you want to call it that, right?
Yes, yes.
So I think one of the things that hangs people up a lot in trying to speak this language that we're talking about is they feel like they have to be 100% fluent in just that language, and that everything has to occur only in that format. And so one of the things that I really want to liberate people on is we're not all that psychic. I mean, it's not a, it's miraculous, but it's kind of normal. Like I want to normalize it a little bit. I want everyone to see all of the common ways in which we experience this stuff. Like you said, the common way in which everything is communicating to you. And so you can think of it as a game. You can think of it as Jungian analysis. You can think of it as symbolism or linguistics or art or literary interpretation, whatever it is. Those are all intellectual kind of academic angles that you can come at this stuff from. And you can do the just dumbed down version of asking Google everything. I, when you when you were talking about that great, experience that you have where, you ask for things and then you have this experience and there's all this stuff kind of swirling around you and happening. And I was thinking about the fact that whenever I talk to people, when I first am introduced to them, like a potential student or something, one of the things that I really like to ask everybody is, what brought you here to this moment having this conversation with me? And everyone has a cool rabbit hole on the internet story. They have a flying carpet experience. You know what I mean? Like where you go in looking for a recipe and you come out 3 hours later and you've got an image of the goddess for your altar and like somebody, you know what I mean? Like you're like, I don't know how I got here. But asking them to retrace those steps is really fun. And it's because I want people to see that the things that they're dismissing as ordinary, listening to you talk about your experiences sounds and feels magical. And you use this magical language, and that's your gift. And I kind of think maybe my gift is about translating in between the people who speak like you do and the people who think that they can't, and saying, oh no, honey, that's happening to you all the time. Here's what that looks like when that happens to you. And it really kind of giving people rose-colored glasses on purpose. You know what I mean? Like,
I do.
you really should wear them more often.
Or you got them the day you were born, and someone told you that they looked funny on you, and you set them aside. But here they are, sweetheart. You saved them in the pocket of your heart. So, there's a part of you that knew you would need them, and here they are. See them? Pick them up and put them on. That's the work you and I are doing. That's where our work is dovetailing, I think. This intention to normalize intuition, to say, when I look at the world, I feel really weird, like, and I don't want to say this out loud, but I feel like Donald Trump is lying. And I don't know why I know that, but I know that. That's intuition. That's reading patterns. That's reading energy. And if you don't have a degree in psychotherapy in this culture, this this culture of forms and materiality tells you it's not okay to say that. And I'm going to shout you down in a Facebook chat room, right? But, you know, you don't have the authority to, you know, it's very interesting that we come to this place, because one of the things that's happening, I'm working with, you know, my own coaching support. I have a coach and we're working on, you know, what is this thing when I say, you know, I would say that the question that has guided my life from the beginning of the journey, my whole life seems to be built around a question: what if this is real? What if this is real? What if this thing that I sensed when I was 6 years old, playing with the tadpoles and the dragonflies came and sat on my arm, and I sensed that they were in communication with me, not just licking the salt off my skin like someone might have told me. I sensed that the animal that I'm looking into the eyes of, my cat, or, you know, a cow on the farm, or a bird comes and sits beside me or walks beside me. I sensed that those things were real communication events. What if that was real? Right. So the question I keep coming back to in this conversation is, we're in this real fake question right now as a culture. And so what you just said was really super powerful for me to hear, as you sort of went through step by step, walking the listeners through the truth, really, for me, that, you know, this woman is speaking in this way about her own experience. But yours may be different than that. And the fact that you're different doesn't mean you're wrong.
Or that you're not doing it. There's so many, and I tell people all the time, you know, who they say you have an experience, and it's a lady in white eating a lobster roll with a truck driving by with a, you know, flow on the side of it. Maybe it's one of those, right? Those are big, and those get most people's attention. Amazing synchronicities are very hard to ignore. And I'd love to have conversations with people just as a tangent about the concept of synchronicity, because one of my best friends who is particularly does not speak this language, which is one of the reasons why I love her. I say she's my anti-psychic. she said to me that she thought that the topic of synchronicity and coincidence and all that was particularly fascinating, because it's something that happens to people who are atheists. You know, it's something that happens to people who don't believe in the magic. That stuff still happens. So, you know, we do all have these experiences that you can't ignore, right? They really just slap you in the face and say, hold on a minute, wait a minute. But the thing that I find with most people is that there's a spectrum of experiences. Some of them are very, very subtle. They happen in a moment, and there are thousands of them per day, and they fly under the radar, you know? And over time, there are probably some in the middle where, like you said, you walk into a room, somebody gives you a bad vibe. They're being really friendly and they're nice and they're smiling, but you just don't like them. And you probably go home and beat yourself up about it and try to convince yourself that you should, you know, or something like that. And then, you know, years down the road, something happens and you realize, I was right. You know, my first impression, I knew it, and I talked myself out of it. People have those kind of experiences. And so that might be something around the mid-range, you know, of, if you think of this kind of spectrum of the way things communicate with you, some are very soft and some are loud. What I find with most people who are telling themselves that they're not intuitive is, unless the experience spikes at 90, 95% on this 0 to 100 scale, it doesn't count. And I'm like, but what about all the ones that happen at 25%, 40%? And I get, you know, I bet that you have a good 50% experience every single day, at least one. And you've somehow told yourself that that's just a part of your personality. Or you've said things like, oh, well, I'm a good judge of character. And you dismiss it, you put it in this box where it's not miraculous. You know what I mean? Like, oh, well, that's just me, just kind of picking up on people. I'm good at that. Or,
Right.
I'm good at reading between the lines or whatever. We have all these things in the language that dismisses. You hear those
Right.
terms I'm using, like, oh
Yeah.
yeah, I'm really good at reading between the lines. Well, what is reading between the lines? To me, reading between the lines is intuition and it's magic. And you've just told yourself that it's no big deal, yet you do it all the time. And it's how all happening inside your own head. And so unless you have feedback from outside of yourself that can identify for you, oh, wait a minute. How did I know that? And the thing that's interesting is the confidence that you need to find your intuition and your ability to receive this communication is actually waiting for you in someone else's head. You actually have to communicate with someone else a lot of times in order to identify where those psychic hits are. It's someone
Interesting.
else's feedback when they say, oh my God, I can't believe you just said that. You won't believe what happened to me today. It's those things that people come back and reflect back at you that make you go, oh, well, wait a minute. Maybe that meant more than I realized it did. So there's this kind of like, it is a conversation. And I think that the theme for me in our conversation is that, intuition is a conversation. This experience is, like you said, a call and response kind of experience, that everything is communicating with you. And if you choose to talk back, it'll answer again and the
Yeah.
conversation will go further.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And I think that the qu this quality of being mirrored back is a y unique human, well, actually not unique. It's a human need, but it's also a need of, it seems, based on what we observe in nature, to be a need of the natural world as well, right? We need to be mirrored back to ourselves to know that we're real. Just to stay with what you were talking about, I could go off into the natural world now, but I'll stay with what you said. I think that one of the reasons we discount, and that is built into our language, and language is, pardon me for saying this, a patriarchal form, right? So we're trained by the culture, the society, which we were born into a culture that that values some ways of expressing yourself, some skills and talents, and dismisses others. But that's changing. And what we're watching is the rising of these tools, which are, sort of held inside the label of the feminine tools, the more intuitive, liquid, moving tools that we have of intuition. And the challenge that we get through our schooling, through our popular culture, and so forth, is that person, that troll who's gonna squash you. So that's what we're afraid of. So we're trained by our culture to not speak it out because. And I made a note because we can't contain the power if it's real. We're not trained to hold our own power. We're not trained to ground, center, and radiate. We're trained to shrink down, listen, receive, take in, and then sort of parrot back what we're told. And that's changing. And that's why the world feels scary right now. So,
I've noticed something a lot about the language you were just talking about, kind of patriarchal language form and all that. And I was thinking when earlier when I mentioned the metaphor of the rose-colored glasses and about putting them on, I realized that we usually hear the phrase rose-colored glasses in terms of there being something to disparage about that, right? And
yes.
I'm very struck by the fact that that I see disparaging terminology like bleeding hearts liberal. And it always strikes me as like, well, what's wrong with that? Like, how did that become a bad thing? Like what you just said, literally, I am a bleeding heart liberal. And that's like somebody taunting me by saying you have brown hair. You know, like, well, when did it become an insult, you know?
Exactly. It's what they're doing is suppressing your nature. They're suppressing the nature of what a human being actually is. A human being is a braid of both masculine and feminine qualities. And in this conversation, I don't want to leave the impression that we now need to rise into a feminine-dominated culture. I think that we need to raise both the divine masculine, which has nothing to do with the patriarchy, and the divine feminine, right, which has nothing to do with the imagery that we're seeing, the way women are treated and exploited, their bodies, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to make this into that conversation, but that's also swirling in the hologram that I'm sitting in. How to talk about that in a way that's not off-putting, but is rather inviting men to the table of the conversation and inviting women to the conversation about the body that isn't sexualized and so on and so on. But I wanted to sort of reflect this in what you were saying about negative things like rose-colored glasses and bleeding heart liberal. One of my favorite stories and one of my favorite experiences actually that I've been having is talking with my mother's best friend, who's a psychiatrist, so a medical doctor, highly schooled, highly trained in talking about the same realms I talk about from point of view of science and the academic language, right? And how we have a conversation around my mother's mental health is so incredibly liberating for both of us, because I get to say these wacky things that I say and see, and she gets to say these sort of rigid things that she says, and we get to soften toward each other. And I remember one of my favorite conversations with her, she sort of dismissed something I said, well, that's just magical thinking. And I said, well, but magical thinking is what I do
I
best.
Like magical thinking.
Yeah. And she laughed and laughed, and she said, and you know what? You're teaching me to do more magical thinking. Just like she's teaching me to do more scientific thinking, to be able to articulate the message that, I mean, I could go all, you know, 360 degrees woo-woo, and then my work would be untouchable and unapproachable. I could live in that world. Why not? I could melt into it, right? But instead, I'm choosing to become more solid, and I keep using the word real, more visible, more whole, more grounded in the real world, and showing up and saying, you know what? The answer to that question, what if this is real, is it is. It is real. And so what do I have to do when, for example, when, you know, the student or the client or the emerging healer has an experience of, whoa, I just felt something in my body. What if that's real? I want to say to that person, well, of course it's real. You had that experience. And it's up to you to interpret what that means inside the container of your own story, inside the dream that you're making with the client that you're working with, right? Because it's when you're working with a client, of course, you're inside of a kind of alternative universe. You build that together. You sit in that dream where everything becomes symbolic. The dog barks. Someone comes to the door. A truck drives by. All of that becomes part of the matrix, if you will, if you've seen that movie. And it can be included and interpreted symbolically, just like that feeling in your body. Right? Yeah.
Well, and you were talking about the, You could personally surrender to, you could just float away in a bubble of woo-woo like Glinda and never come back. And maybe that's what will happen when you leave the world. But, you know, the thing for me is, but I've got to tell someone about it.
You know?
So that's the thing that keeps me here. And that's the thing I think that motivates what I do is, well, I have these awesome, wonderful, magical thinking experiences, and I need someone to play with me. And so in order, I have to do a couple things. I have to be able to tell you the story. So I have to put it in the language that makes sense. I have to explain it in such a way that so that you can see how ordinary it is. So you can do it too. And, you know, I have to somehow both simultaneously demystify what's happening to me while at the same time elevate what's happening to you and infuse it with I have to, you know, take the rose color glasses off me, put them on you and tell you how to use them. And just that simple motivation, it's almost the same as, oh, wow, I saw a really cool movie. You've got to go see it. Or, you know, when you go outside as a little kid and you're hoping somebody's out there to play with, you know, who wants to go for a hike? Because for some reason, I mean, hiking's always better with someone else for a lot of very practical reasons. But there are all these things that you do that that you just want to include other people in it. And I think at the end of the day, what makes it real for me is a kind of selflessness. Or maybe it's selfish. I don't know. The thing is I don't want to just do it by myself.
Yes.
I can't contain it by myself because it's too exciting and it feels too good. And I can't see you sit there thinking that what is happening to you is ordinary and humdrum and not magical and not worth having. I can't sit there and know that and not show you how to see it differently. You know what I mean?
And or not show you what I see. Yeah. And only if you ask. Yeah.
And only if you ask, because here's the thing. And this is the thing that, you know, those people who are waking up and who are experiencing this need to cry out. I think it's interesting because I don't think anybody's paying that much attention to me, but if you sort of watched my social media and you analyzed it, you would see me in the last few months, I went up like in a hot air balloon. I had to get farther away and I have to watch it. So I sort of shot myself into space and I'm like a satellite right now and I'm orbiting everything that's going on. I'm recording everything. I'm watching it. I'm listening to it. Like you said,
oh,
I'm listening.
Interesting. I'm but, in the same place.
I felt a little guilty that I wasn't down in the middle of it, standing on a soapbox, screaming all the things that I could scream, you know, I felt a lot of pull from people who kind of expected that from me. And if someone asked me in conversation, like you and I are having a conversation about it, I'll tell you what's happening and what I think and all that very, very readily. But here's the thing about all the people who are, as Obama said, arguing with strangers on Facebook. The outrage, you know, the welling up and the impulse to scream, you know, is like I've had to go to a place where I let everyone else do that. And observe it and watch it and listen to it. And I'm not ready to comment on it yet because no one is asking. Everyone is projecting right now. It's all going out. It's like a little atomic explosion. Everyone's exploding and setting off the person next to them. And so there's a lot of outward kind of stuff. It's fission right now. It's not fusion.
Beautiful.
And so, you know, as an intuitive, as someone who might observe things, I'm not one of those people who walks up to strangers and grasps them by the cuff of their sleeve and says, I have a message for you. I don't do that. I don't like that. I need your permission. And, you know, because that's the only thing that will allow it to flow between us is for you to ask for it. You have to come in and plug in and say, can I have what you have? And right now, no one is really asking. I think we've got to wait until all the little explosions stop happening, and then it starts to get, and I'm speaking kind of abstract, and I'm sort of seeing the future here a little bit. I think I'm waiting to see how things start to recombine before I start naming them.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Well, it does, especially because, you know, as a mystic, you know that naming something locks it in place and the flow has to flow around it and it becomes rigid, and we're not at that state, right? So,
right.
So when I hear you talking about rising above, what I see is this quality of the one who the one who knows that trauma is a conversation with trauma, trying to resolve itself, right? And so all these little explosions are people feeling vulnerable and afraid and trying to sort of map the world that feels like it's moving under their feet. And, you know, we all feel that to some extent. That's why what you do, what I'm doing is, and that's why mystics have always historically withdrawn from the world. Monks go live in hermitages, you know, it's right. So we don't want to get in the fray because we need to hold on to what our job is, really. We came here to hold space for the whole world in blessing, right? We came here to mirror back to everything and everyone, you are my beloved. And we can't do that if we're condemning anything. And so as we feel condemnation rise in our own hearts, we have to lift up and do our own work. Because when condemnation arises in me, it breaks the world. I know that because I'm a space holder for love. So if my gaze fractures and I can't see love in you, then it's in me. The fracture's in me, not in you. And I have to do that work here. Not blame you for why I feel bad. And so what I see when you talk about rising above and looking down and going in your balloon, I see exactly that. I see rising above so you can become wide and deep enough to contain the whole world in blessing, the whole world, right? In the gaze.
I feel like I just got a reading from you because I didn't even realize the language that I was using. I was describing a metaphor of this hot air balloon. I was actually picturing the Wizard of Oz, I was thinking about escape and, you know, those kind of images, and then it became satellites because that always goes to a sci-fi place for me. And but then you started mirroring that language back to me about rising above and zooming out so that you can encompass a bigger
more
picture. Yeah, so you can see more, so that you can see the whole earth instead of just, you know, what's right at your feet. That makes me feel better about doing that. Yeah. Somehow I felt a little guilty. I felt like I was like, sorry, see you later. I'll come back, you know. I'm going to Oz for a little while. But what you just described that I'm doing makes me feel like, yeah, okay, that's, yeah, I'm doing my job. That's what I'm doing.
You are. And I think the wizard rising in the balloon, the Oz archetype, can also, you know, sort of echoes the other side of that, which, you know, the big reveal, like the great and powerful Oz is just a human being. Well, you know what? We're just human beings, right? And so that's the shadow work that the teacher of this sort of thing has to do, is to come back in touch with our own humanity, And also the humanity of the one we would condemn. And I see that starting to enter the comments, where we're talking about the people involved in things. For example, I posted on Facebook, I'm uncomfortable with the way we talk about certain women in the administration. Yeah. Or, right, I want us to talk about people the way we would want to be talked about. Not as like everyone, like I'm not shaking my finger like someone's grandmother, like be nice. Yeah. It's more like I want, for me, when I use language, and I only always reflect on my own experience, right? Like I would never say, don't talk about her that way. It's more like, oh, I just said this thing. I just thought this thing. Where's that, the seed of that in me?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And maybe it comes from having disabled parents or working with so many people who come believing they're broken, and all I see is beauty. It is the most, the most astonishing thing when one of these human beings comes into your office and says, I'm broken, I'm flawed, I'm nothing, I'm at the end of my story. If you can't help me, I'm going to, I just don't know what I'm going to do. And you see light pouring out of their skin. And you realize that all we have to do here is find the layer and peel that away, the layer that of story and illusion. And when I say illusion, I mean thoughts that other people gave you about what's real and what's true and what you're allowed to be. Messages from the culture of school and church and synagogue and mosque and whatever, world you got trained up in, and military, right? And medical, all these different religions that we have, science, medicine, military. Each of them has its own language of suppression, right? And so when one of these beings comes in streaming with light, it's our job, you and me, to find the layer, like how what they got caught under, and help them see it. And they'll push it back. It'll dissolve as soon as they see it. Because back to the idea of the gaze again, when they can gaze on themselves the way the divine gazes upon them from the balloon, from that, lifted above. Through the eyes of the goddess Kuan Yin, the Avalada Shivara, I say that wrong, but forgive me, the one who looks down on all beings, all life, with compassion, right? So when we rise to that place, and we can see ourselves that way, that's transformation. That's our work, to bring someone to that place. It's not about me mirroring back your radiance. It's about me mirroring it back so you can mirror it back to yourself.
So as I'm hearing you describe that, and this may be a good place to kind of close the conversation officially.
Mm.
As you started to describe that person coming in who's broken and who's feeling very unmagical, who needs what it is that we do, how can they find you? Where do they start?
Well, come to my website, amyoscar.com. Come to, I have a free Facebook group where I play with these ideas with lots of people. It's called Sanctuary for Soul Callers. You have to ask to join, but there's no charge. Or join my one circle where we're having these conversations every single week. I do a live call every week. We're in a Facebook group constantly talking about all of this. And we also are doing real practical work, taking from the discussion, going out into the world with our tools of expansion and contraction, with our centering and grounding tools, and coming back to the group to discuss, well, I tried this and this is what happened. And so I invite you to meet me that way, or you can pick up my book. It's 444, my favorite number.
What is the name of the book?
Oh, Sea of Miracles. And I wrote that book in, I think in 2011, maybe 2009. I can't even remember. It's been a while. But that's a book of my own sort of awakening to the presence of the angels. And it's kind of an intro to that. To this kind of thinking. Yeah.
I'll put all of those links as I find them in the show notes. So all the details that you talked about will send people to you. I really felt a lot of people there at the end listening and wondering, like, okay, how do I become that person? How do I go and have this conversation with you? And as someone who was blessed to get to have one of these conversations with you, I know that there are tons of people envying me right now who are dying to talk to you want to make sure that they can find you. This has been such a great conversation, and I hope that you will come back and do this again with me.
Oh, I would so love to. It's been an honor to just be held in the field of your wisdom and encouragement, and in the field of your wonder, I want to say, the way that you sort of hold the space for wonder is profoundly moving to me. And thank you for seeing me through your eyes.
Wow. So I apologize for the weird sound disturbance in those last few moments. Amy's voice sounded so bright and warm and compelling through the whole conversation. After the call, I joked with her that the recording must have captured the sound of her drifting away from us in her holographic bubble. But you can go and find her and connect with her again. I've included all her links and information in the show notes. For show notes, links, and past episodes, please visit shiftyourspirits.com. You can subscribe to the podcast in iTunes or Stitcher, or whatever app you use to access podcasts. If you're new to podcasts, it's that purple button on your iPhone. Click it, search Shift Your Spirits, and hit subscribe. Also, if you want to support the show, it would really help me out if you'd leave a rating and a review in iTunes and share it with some friends you think would be into it. If you'd like to get a reading with me or download free ebooks and guided meditations, please go to sladeroberson.com. And if you're interested in my professional intuitive program, check out automaticintuition.com. I'll talk to you later.